four men passed around a bottle of Jim Beam as they peeled up State Road 19, giddy with excitement about what they'd do once they hogtied those coons and got them to a tree. The engine revved as they hit the crest of the road, doing 80 miles per hour. Getting pulled over was the least of their concerns because Olin's cousin, Sheriff Bickford, was riding shotgun. Bickford had gotten a tip and rounded up the other three to head from Jackson over to Meridian and then north to Neshoba County. Olin, sitting in the back seat, threw back a swig and passed the bottle on, assuring the others they were doing God's work. The last thing anybody needs is for them to start voting. Bad enough the goddamn government wants us to let them eat in our restaurants and sit beside us on a bus. If the Lord had meant for whites to mix with coloreds, he would have made the coloreds a hell of a lot smarter. Either we stay all white, or we die amongst them. A couple of the other men nodded in silent agreement. Bickford had explained to the others that his buddy, a Neshoba County sheriff, tipped him off that they'd landed a few of those troublemaking civil rights activists from up north. They'd made arrangements. The plan was to arrest the men and hold them for a few hours. After nightfall, they'd release the men, tell them to be out of the county before midnight. 15 minutes later, the men would find themselves caught in the speed trap out on Rock Cut Road. Bickford's friend told him he could get a piece of the action if he made it up in time. A few minutes later, the car slowed to a crawl. "I think this is it," Bickford said. They all went quiet as the car eased up the edge of a band of trees. Bickford spotted Smite Goody's truck and pointed. They knew they were in the right place. They cut the engine. All four men sat in the vehicle for a moment, polishing off the bottle, Bickford's low wheeze of excitement the only sound among them. The sweltering summer darkness cloaked them all. Voices, low, some laughing, whispered through the cypress trees. The men piled out of the car. Olin and Bickford unloaded rope and pliers from the trunk before they followed the sound of the voices. By the time they reached the clearing, they found at least six or seven men there, all standing in a semicircle. Someone had parked his car just so and flooded the space with his car beams. The low-lying light cast the men's faces in ghastly angles, their cheekbones and chipped teeth upturned in wicked smiles of accomplishment. Bickford was the first of his little quartet to reach the clearing, Olin right on his tail. The heavy scent of wet earth and male sweat slinked through the small crowd. By the looks of things, Bickford could see the arrangements had changed. The rope and pliers were no longer needed. They were too late. All the other men stood over an open, shallow grave, and lying at the bottom of it, three young men, two white and one Negro. All three had been shot dead, their bodies oddly contorted, their faces, grim vestiges of youth and hope, extinguished. Bickford eased over to his friend and gathered up the details of how the plan had unfolded. According to his buddy, some folks had gotten impatient. Guns this time, instead of rope. The blue Ford station wagon the three men had been riding in will be burned and disposed of over at Bogachita. The other men stood around, holding conversations, laughing even, and grabbing a smoke. One man stood at the edge of the circle, pointing a brownie camera down into the grave and snapping pictures. There was a new man in their midst, because Bickford heard gagging and vomiting against a tree behind him, probably someone who'd never seen a dead body, or the way Mississippi handled rabble-rousers and nigger lovers. Now all that was left to do was collect a few souvenirs, an ear, a finger, and head back to Jackson.